welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast. If you love tennis and want to improve your game, this podcast is for you. Whether it's technique, strategy, equipment, or the mental game, tennis professional Ian Westerman is here to make you a better player. And now, here's Ian.
Hi, and welcome to the Essential Tennis Podcast, your place for free, expert tennis instruction that can truly help you improve your game. Today's episode of the Essential Tennis Podcast is brought to you by SomersetSportsPerformance.com. Well, just a few quick housekeeping issues here before we get started with today's topic and with the show. First of all, I want to thank everybody that's a member of my forums and community at EssentialTennis.com for your patience as I've been dealing with host issues. And I've switched my web host a couple of times actually in the last 2 weeks or so. And as a result, the forums have been down once or twice. And I want to thank all of you very much for your patience. And as of right now, the forums are back up and operating very well. Everything's loading very quickly. So thank you guys for your patience as I've been continuing to try to make everything work as well as possible at EssentialTennis.com. Also, I want to let everybody know who wrote me an email about your comment that you posted on Jason's Tour News blog having to do with getting new strains. I'm sending out a whole bunch of free sets of strain for everybody who responded to my contest. I think that was two shows ago. And all those sets of strains are in the mail. Just wanted to let you guys know that I didn't forget about it and they are on their way. I actually ended up sending a set out to Malaysia and another set to the UK. So those might take a little bit of time to get there. So please be patient, but they are all on their way. All right. Well, today we've got a couple of great topics to talk about. We're going to be talking about how to best perform in a 10-point tiebreaker in your match play. We're also going to be talking about how to best pick a racket for your game. We're going to be discussing that with Master Racket Technician Jeremy Plumley. And lastly, we're going to be discussing practicing for your tennis game or staying in shape for your tennis game while you're off the court. So sit back, relax, and get ready for some great tennis instruction.
And now it's time for Essential Tennis Q&A.
All right, let's get started with our first question on today's podcast, and it has to do with the tiebreaker and 10-point tiebreaker specifically, which the USTA is now starting to use as a third set when teams or players split one set apiece. Now they're using a first player to 10 points tiebreaker system to determine the match. And so this is something that's kind of a little bit different skill and certainly a different feel than actually playing match play with a set format, first player to six games. And it's important psychologically to have a good idea of what you guys want to do or how you want to be thinking moving into these tiebreakers, which are obviously extremely important because they decide the outcome of the match. So clearly you want to have as much of advantage as you can. This question comes to us from Sally, and she wrote this on the forums in the podcast section at EssentialTennis.com. She wrote and said, "Do you have any advice or do's and don'ts on winning the dreaded 10-point tiebreaker? You're in a USTA match, you've split sets, and now face a 10-point tiebreaker. Do you start off steady or aggressive? Do you do everything you've been doing but with more intensity, i.e. more activity at the net, more formations, etc.? Do you slow down and talk with your partner? Do you switch sides? Do you think all 10-point tiebreakers are simply a crapshoot? I'm hopeful that we can learn a way to have an edge over tiebreakers. So many matches in USTA will be determined by their outcome. Thanks." Well, sure, Sally. And as I started off with, it's very tricky to approach these 10-point tiebreakers psychologically because you've just got done playing two, assumedly, tough sets of tennis because you guys have split sets. So one team has won one of the sets, the other team the other. So we've had a close battle here up until this point. And now everything is going to hinge on this short, relatively speaking, section of points. The two sets that you just played probably took it at least about an hour and a half or so, and now it's going to come down to who can win 10 points first. And so psychologically, there's kind of a very quick transition here, moving to the tiebreaker, and it adds a lot of pressure to both sides. So basically, the two main errors that I see teams make and that I see players make when they go to either a 12-point tiebreaker, which is first to seven, or a 10-point tiebreaker, which is first to 10. And I know that's not confusing at all, is it? But the two main mistakes that I see people make are, first of all, mistake number one is they get really tentative and give their opponents the opportunity to take over and win. So they get into this tiebreaker after playing good tennis to get themselves to this point. They've played a close, tough match, and then they get into the tiebreaker and let the pressure get to them, and they start getting tentative, they start getting scared, they start pushing the ball and playing not to lose, basically. Just trying to keep the ball in play. Not that there's anything wrong with that. At the core of it, obviously, we want to be consistent at all times as much as possible. However, this team gets scared and starts just pushing the ball in play. And now your opponents have the opportunity to attack, to take over, to play aggressively, and to take the match from you. Now, it's possible that you could still win based on their errors if they don't attack and be aggressive and do it consistently. Clearly, you still have the chance of winning, so that's good. But that's probably not what got you to this point in the first place. And when I say tentative and scared, I'm saying that in a relative term. I mean more tentative and more scared than you were during the set that you won. So that's the main. I'm sorry, that's one of the two main mistakes that I see teams make when they get to this situation. The second main error that I see teams make is that they try to be a hero and they overplay everything and make a lot of errors to give the match away, ultimately. And Sally, I got kind of a sense of that as I was reading your question. You said should we play with more intensity? Should we play more aggressively? Should we try more formations and more activity at the net, etc.? And that worries me a little bit because that's a very common reaction to the tiebreaker. Is players get into it and they think all of a sudden they've got to come up with something spectacular now to win the match. Oh, I've got to hit now all down the line, down the alley, passing shots off the return of serve and hit aces and take scissor kick overheads and aim for the line and all this stuff. And that's not the right approach to have either. And so the two main errors that I see teams make are kind of polar opposites. One is getting scared and playing tentatively, and the other is going all out and just trying to be a hero and hit the perfect shot on every single point. And neither one is the right approach. So here's what I suggest. And in both those two cases, by the way, the teams didn't stick with whatever winning formulas that got them to this place in the first place. So you have to understand that by getting to this 10-point tiebreaker, you must have done something pretty well along the way. You took one of the two sets. You're on even ground with your opponents. Each team has a set. And so you have to understand that along the way here, you've played some good tennis, and you, at the very maybe not by your standards, maybe you think that you got lucky to get to this point, but the reality is you and your partner did something that won points because you've won at least six games along the way in order to take one of the sets from your opponents. So understand that at some point there were a whole bunch of points in there that you and your partner executed some play or other well. And you've taken a set, and you've gotten yourselves to this point. So that's an important thing to understand right off the bat. Now, here's my top three things that I would tell you, Sally, you and your partner, in order to be more successful. We've gone over so far the two main things not to do. Don't be tentative, relatively speaking, compared to how you played the rest of the match leading up to this point. And don't try to be a hero either, you or your partner, and try to hit incredible shots in order to take the match. So those are the two main things not to do. Now, my three things that I want you to do are, first of all, stay calm, focused, and just try your best not to get excited. We don't want to get all crazy and get caught up in the moment. Don't get me wrong. It is important, and I understand that. And it does put extra pressure on you knowing that we've just got 10 points to win here or 10 points to lose for this match to be over. But do your best to stay calm, stay focused, and don't get overly excited. We need to stay in the zone here and keep our concentration as much as possible. Number two, decide exactly what specific plays have won you a set already and commit to sticking with those. Like I said a second ago, something that you've done over the last hour or hour and a half has worked. You've won a set, and you need to be aware of what happened in that set, and hopefully you were throughout the set, during the set, so that you could try to repeat those winning patterns and those winning strategies to be able to take that set. But who knows? Maybe you weren't really paying attention, but now you'd better think back and realize, all right, this is why we won the set that we did win. And you need to stick with those winning patterns. Pick the number one pattern that you think has resulted in you guys winning points, and just stick with that specific strategy. Give yourself something to focus on that's tangible, that's specific, something that you can try to achieve during this tiebreaker to keep your focus so that you don't get overly excited and start trying crazy shots. Number three, this is my last tip here for you. Play the percentages and play them confidently. Don't let up, but don't try to be a hero either. So we need to find some middle ground here between playing really aggressive and going all out and trying to hit the perfect shot and letting up and playing tentatively. We want to play high percentage tennis, which means cross-court returns, unless they're playing Australian or I formation, obviously. But cross-court return of serve, down the middle serves, and make sure that you make a lot of first serves, etc. Percentage doubles tennis. We want to take high quality percentage play, but do it confidently. We don't want to do this as a default and do it tentatively and scared, as I said before. But play the percentages within whatever strategy that you guys have picked out that has worked for you in the set that you did win. So, Sally, hopefully that answers your question. A couple do nots there and several do's to be more successful in your tiebreakers. And by the way, guys, there was some good conversation in the forums about this as well and some other good tips from other teaching professionals. So if you want even more feedback, go to the forums, go to the podcast section. And there was several posts having to do with winning more tiebreakers. Sally, thanks a lot for your question. Hopefully that's helpful to you. And good luck with your USTA play. I'm really happy that you're getting out there and playing some good competitive tennis. All right, next up we have a question from Alex, and this was posted on the forums at Essential Tennis as well. And he wrote and asked, in the next podcast, could you maybe discuss some things I could do to practice off the tennis court, with or without a racket? And I responded to him and asked if he meant cross-training, meaning other sports, or more kind of tennis-specific things in general. And he wrote back again and said, yes, more tennis-specific things. It has been raining here for the past week, so I couldn't play. And I got to thinking, what could I possibly do to help my game when inside? But any workouts or anything else that you can think of that would help would be really cool. Thanks. Okay, Alex, no problem. Yes, I can relate to that, kind of being stuck at home and not having a court to play at and just kind of having to make do. I've got a list of, let's see, two, four. I've got six different things here that you could do in order to work on your game and do tennis-specific things, maybe not necessarily actually hitting the ball, but in some cases you actually could too, depending on what you have to work with. First of all, if you have some space, if you have a basement and you have like some cinder block walls or unfinished walls, that sort of thing, or even if you have some finished walls, you could use a wall to actually hit a ball. And depending on what surface you have to work with, that's going to depend what type of ball. But you can get a Nerf training kind of practice ball in a lot of places online. Wilson makes them, and they're made out of a really soft foam Nerf material. And usually we use those for little peewee kids during clinics because they're very easy to hit and they're soft, so you don't have to worry about kids hitting each other in the face and doing damage and that sort of thing. But you can get a couple of those Nerf balls and actually volley, rally the ball in the air against a wall, even a finished wall that's painted, and do no damage at all. And you can do that just to work on your focus on the ball, work on making good contact in the middle of your racket. And if you have a wall that's maybe a brick wall somewhere in your house, like I said before, maybe an unfinished basement where you could maybe even set some tape up. I guess you could do this on a painted wall too. Get some low stick tape and set up a little target area for yourself. Just a foot square box with some low stick tape would be a great way to set up a target for yourself and just hit short volley strokes. And just volley the ball in the air and do a whole bunch of forehands aiming for that target, and then a whole bunch of backhand volleys aiming for that target. But this is specific practice that you could do by yourself at home without endangering anybody, hopefully, unless you're making big swings at the ball, in which case no guarantees. But I would suggest probably starting off with volleys and going from there, since they're going to be your most compact stroke. But this is a way that you can work on your focus on the ball and on contact and all kinds of things like that, your aim, your accuracy, and you can get some good repetition that way. You just have to get a little bit creative with the space that you have to work with and get some equipment that can help you do it a little more safely, I guess is the best word, by getting a soft Nerf ball. Next up, let's talk about some training or some fitness ideas. Jumping rope is awesome. Do that in 2, 3, 4, maybe even 5 minute sets using a jump rope, and works on your coordination and your footwork and your strength in your legs, all kind of your cardio, your conditioning, all kinds of stuff at once. Jumping rope is awesome. You could also get some free weights and work out that way at home. And lastly, I put down resistance bands. Resistance bands are awesome. And I've used them in the past to help work on a shoulder that used to be bothering me. And you can get a set of resistance bands for $40-$50 and really get a good muscular workout targeting very specific parts of your body that are very pertinent to tennis. And it can be a really good exercise just using resistance bands. And any kind of exercise stuff that you guys do like those ideas, just make sure that, relatively speaking, it's usually kind of low reps and a little bit higher resistance, so that we're kind of training more of a quick, kind of explosive type of muscle, as opposed to doing a set of 30 or 40 of something where it's more endurance. Not that you don't need endurance in tennis, but in general, points usually only last 5, maybe 10 seconds, and so we need quick, you know, explosive responses from our muscles. And just make sure that you're doing appropriate workouts using those different ideas. Next up, one of my personal favorites to work on your coordination, your eye-hand coordination specifically, teach yourself how to juggle. Juggling is awesome for developing your eye-hand coordination. And I taught myself how to do it when I was, I think, 10 or 11 or so. And I know that it helped out my tennis game tremendously, learning it at that early of an age, to be able to keep track of 3 moving objects all at once, using mostly your peripheral vision, because clearly your sharp vision can't track 3 objects at once. But being able to do that, it helps train your eyes to be much more focused on what's going on around you. And clearly we're working on coordinating our hands as well to be able to move underneath different objects as they fly through the air and keep everything kind of under control and relaxed, even though there's a lot going on at once. Juggling is an excellent way to improve your coordination and skills with your eyes and your hands. So I suggest that as well. Next up, read. There's a lot of great books out there. Mental Tennis by Vic Braden is awesome. Another good one is Winning Ugly by Brad Gilbert. There's lots of good technical books out there as well, talking about technique and strategy. But my personal favorites are books about the mental game. For me, that's most entertaining and something that I like to read about. You can also listen to audiobooks. And audible.com, they're not one of my sponsors, but I use them for downloading audiobooks, and they've got a lot of good selection there. Some books that you can put on your iPod or onto a CD and listen to while you're in the car driving, and a good way to get information there. Also, podcasts. You found my podcast, and this is a great way to get good information. There's other tennis podcasts out there as well. And there's lots of information out there that you can help improve your understanding and awareness about your tennis game and improve yourself without even being on a tennis court. You can also watch tennis matches online and on TV and see how the best players in the world deal with the same kind of situations that you get into during your tennis play. Those are all also things, kind of informational things, that you can do at home without needing a tennis racket or a tennis ball or a court or anything that really can help improve your tennis game. And a couple other things here that Charles suggested, both of these things Charles suggested, my last two things here. First of all, you can practice your toss inside if you have ceilings that are above probably 7 or 8 feet. You probably need at least 8 feet, a little bit more probably. But if your ceilings are high enough, you can practice your toss and put a racket or a target down below you to let the ball land and drop, and practice getting your toss up there consistently. That's often a thing that a lot of players struggle with, being consistent with. So you can practice your toss. And lastly, you can do shadow stroking. If you have a full-length mirror in your house where you have enough space to make a stroke with your racket, you can do it that way. Or you can use a video camera also and just kind of do slow, relaxed, controlled swings and just kind of track the movement of the racket. This is something that golfers do a lot of to work on their technique, and it's something that we can do as well, just to kind of be more aware of what we're doing with the racket. And you can do that in conjunction with watching video online on YouTube, slow motion video of players, professional players, and watch and see what they do with the racket, and do that, watch yourself do it, and see how closely you can copy that and copy their technique. It's a good way to build awareness of what you're doing with your own strokes. So there's a bunch of ideas for you that are all tennis specific, Alex. There's lots of other things you can do as well as far as cross training. In other words, playing other sports such as basketball or racquetball, etc. But those were all tennis specific things that you can do to keep your game sharp and kind of keep your brain sharp and just give it something to do while you're stuck inside, and continue to focus on your game and improving. It's great that you're looking for ways to do that, Alex. And if I can help you any further, definitely let me know. Thank you for the great question, and hopefully that was of help to you. All right, real quickly before we get to Jeremy and talking about racket selection, just wanted to briefly tell you guys about our sponsor for the Essential Tennis Podcast, and that is SomersetSportsPerformance.com. Somerset is spelled SOMERSET, SomersetSportsPerformance.com. They're very unique in that they have an online training and nutrition program. Even if you don't have time to go to a gym where you're working with a trainer, working with somebody who can help you with your diet, this is a way you guys can now do it online. Just like how you're getting your tennis instruction and information from myself with the podcast and at EssentialTennis.com, you can do the same thing with your workout and nutrition at SomersetSportsPerformance.com. You have access to a certified fitness and nutritional staff, as well as doctors, sports trainers, and doctors. And when you sign up, you tell them information about yourself, and they will set up a customized training program for you, including technique demonstrations and workout charts and plans, and also customized nutritional plans, including recipes, grocery lists. And they basically just give you guys the whole formula for getting your body in shape, both in terms of working out and nutrition. So go check out SomersetSportsPerformance.com whenever you get the chance. And I thank them very much for their support of the Essential Tennis Podcast. Couldn't do everything I'm doing on the website without them. So we thank them for their support. And if you appreciate EssentialTennis.com and the podcast, go and support them by going to their website and checking out their programs. SomersetSportsPerformance.com. Hey, Jeremy, how are you?
I'm doing well, Ian. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks very much for joining me on the podcast again. I apologize that it's been a little while that You haven't been on the show in a little bit.
Yeah, well, you know, you've had a lot of good topics, a lot of good people to talk to. It's good to share the information. I don't want to hog it all for everybody.
Well, that's nice of you. But thanks for coming back, and it's always good to have you here. Jeremy is a master racket technician and really knows his stuff when it comes to equipment. So anytime I get a good gear question, I always like to have Jeremy on the show. So let's talk about our question. It comes to us from Mark H. on the forums. And basically, Mark had a racket that he used to use, or actually currently uses. It's a Vocal Catapult V1 OS, but the racket is now discontinued. And basically, Mark would like to know if he goes to other manufacturers, other brands, and wants to get a comparable racket, one that's going to kind of feel similar to that, what should he look for, Jeremy? His question basically comes down to, what is the best way to narrow down possible racket contenders to just a few without actually hitting with them? So, Jeremy, I thought it'd be a good topic to talk about. What types of rackets should people be looking for when it comes to finding something new or maybe finding a replacement? What do you think?
Well, the good news and the bad news of that is when a company discontinues a frame, they normally don't get rid of it completely.
Okay.
What they normally do is they upgrade the technology. For example, Wilson went from N-code to K-factor. In this case, you know, with the Vocal, they actually went away from Vocal. Boris Becker, which is he's the majority owner of Vocal, has his own racket line, and they replace it with a Boris Becker equivalent, a Boris Becker V1.
Okay.
And what normally happens is they normally play a little different, but they're normally close enough where people can go from one racket to the other without making a big sacrifice. So that's the good news. The bad news is that every other racket company out there probably makes a racket that is pretty similar to that.
All right.
And the good thing about that is that there's lots of rackets to try, but the bad news is there's lots of rackets to try.
Sure.
If you have a racket that you like, that you've been using for several seasons, maybe several years in some cases, what you can do is, you know, find the specs on it. Most of the time it's on the inside of the throat of the racket. Find out how much it weighs, how much, you know, how big the head size is, what's the length, what's this,
balance.
Yeah, that's another good one. But really what you want to look for is that kind of static weight and head size. And then the balance, you know, can vary a little bit, because that's something that you might like more, as a beginner than, you know, you might like more of a head heavy racket. As you advance
right.
on, you might want something that's a little bit more head light. But what you can do is you can actually go to tenniswarehouse.com, which is probably the biggest racket website out there, that they have loads of information. And you can plug in that information that you just found in their racket finder program. And, you know, you can go very wide with your search, or you can stay pretty narrow. And they'll be able to come up with, you know, normally between 7 to 10 rackets that'll fit in there. And the good news is with Tennis Warehouse, you can also order the demo online. They'll mail it to you. You can try it out, and then you can mail it back before you order it. So you don't have to buy anything blindly.
Cool. Yeah, that's nice. What do they charge for that service, by the way?
I don't think there's an actual charge for the racket. I think what it is basically just a shipping fee.
Okay.
I haven't done this in a few years. I'm lucky enough to have access to the rackets pretty much on my back wall at work. But I think it's just a postage and handling fee. I don't think there's any fee for the actual demoing of the racket.
Wow, that's nice.
Yeah.
So if Mark wants to go with a different manufacturer and maybe he's ready to try something a little bit different, maybe since he started hitting with the Vocal, he's improved his skills. Can we talk a little bit about, in general, what playing levels should be looking for what type of specifications in a frame?
You got it. Normally, beginners tend to prefer a lighter racket that's a little bit more evenly balanced, or mm-hmm. maybe even head heavy, depending on their strengths.
Okay.
Obviously, if you're a 60-year-old woman that's picking up the game, it's going to be a different racket than if you're a 25-year-old man. In general, the stronger you are, the heavier racket you want to use.
Okay.
You don't want to use a really lightweight racket because they tend to have a lot of power and you'll tend to overhit. Heavier rackets obviously is not doing as much of the work for you. Your swing is doing the work.
Sure.
So you're not going to have that same problem with a heavier racket. You're going to be doing most of the work yourself rather than the frame doing it. And then in between a heavy racket and a light racket are kind of those tweeners where most people fit in. These are the rackets that are about 10 ounces, normally pretty close to evenly balanced. They have good characteristics for power and also decent characteristics for control. And that's normally a good place to start unless you fall into one of those categories where you're either, one, need a lot of power, or two, need a lot of control.
Okay. Sounds good. Can we kind of put some general specifications as far as the tweener racket and your kind of average level player? Would you say that's what that varies between like a 3-0 and a 4-0 level, somewhere in that range, or what do you think?
You might be able to take that down a half each. You might be able to go 2-5 to 4-5, because 4-5s, while they do have well grooved strokes and stuff like that, sometimes they do need a little bit of extra power.
Okay.
And that's normally where a 4-5 player will kind of lean in towards that tweener category. They just need a little bit more pop on their stroke. It's also a key thing that some hit players who used to play at a very high level, as they age and their skills maybe diminish a little bit, they look for that kind of lighter racket with a little bit more power rather than that 13-ounce wooden racket that they used in college.
Right. All right, so in general, the lighter weight rackets... In general, the lighter weight rackets are doing a little more work for you. Is that correct? They're giving more power to your shot without having to work quite as hard?
Right. They're normally head-heavy rackets with a pretty wide beam, a wide body design that's pretty stiff. They'll do more of the work for you.
Okay. So if I'm looking at rackets above 11 ounces, you said it kind of in the 10-ounce range for the tweener rackets. So anything above 11 ounces, basically, you'd better be a pretty strong hitter of the ball to be able to look at something in that range.
Yeah. You better be taking a pretty good cut at the ball if you're using a racket that's over 11 ounces.
Okay.
If you have short, punchy strokes and you're using a racket like that, you're going to leave things really short. You're going to open up yourself to a lot of hurting.
Okay. Makes sense. All right. Well, anything else to add, Jeremy, before we wrap up?
It's important to remember that, we can give general characteristics to rackets and players, but ultimately what it comes down to is trying out the racket and what you like. There are a lot of players out there that are using, very heavy rackets that maybe their game doesn't fit it, but they like how it feels.
The same can be said
for higher level players that like to use very light rackets. It's all about what you want and what you like. The other thing is, if you have something that doesn't feel perfect when you first try it, you can always add some lead tape. You can customize it, and we've talked about that in the past too.
Sure. All right. Well, thank you very much, Jeremy and Mark H. Hopefully that's helpful to you.
Yeah,
and
good luck, Mark.
Yeah. And Mark, try out as many as you can. Kind of start following those general guidelines that Jeremy talked about at first. And if you have any questions that kind of go into further detail with racket selection, feel free to drop by the forums at essentialtennis.com. And Jeremy has his own section in the forums there dedicated to gear and racket technology and that sort of thing. So, Mark, thank you for your question. And Jeremy, again, thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me. I think I'm going to go out and play some tennis in this nice spring weather we're finally having.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it as well. All right, Jeremy, take care.
You too.
All right, that brings the Essential Tennis Podcast, episode number 58, to a close. Thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast, and I hope that the information that was provided here was helpful to you. If I can ever help you specifically with a certain part of your game, feel free to go over to essentialtennis.com and register for the forums, and I'd love to have more of you guys posting there to get information and advice and fit in with the community there as well. There's a great group of people that continues to come back on a regular basis, and we've got a nice kind of family of listeners that's starting the forum. So again, thank you for joining me. Take care, everybody, and good luck with your tennis.